I'm 27-year-old Jake Hugo. I'm excited today. Hence the shouting and screaming in a weird voice. All right, fun, exciting show. First, I'm going to go rail for the first segment. Yeah, I think you're going to enjoy that. A lot of things have got me worked up. Then Johnny Pie comes in, and then after that, Anna comes in. We've got a cavalcade of stars here. One of the things, one of the stories you shouldn't miss is what is happening in Myanmar. It is past time that we cover it. We covered it a little bit before, but now it's flared up again. And of course, in between all the Trump tweets, nobody else is giving it any coverage. And so we got to do our part here. It is amazing. It is unfortunately horrible, but it is very important for the world. And then a football star gets detained and has an interesting wake up moment. He's a good guy, but what happened to him is also amazing, also terrible, and also instructive. That's what we do on the program. Terrible but instructive. That's what a lot of the news is. Having said that, speaking of which, let's go to John Kelly. Okay. I like how Jesus knows I'm teeing it up. All right. Fascinating story out of the New York Times, also a little bit from the Daily Beast in this reporting as well. It is about how John Kelly, the chief of staff for Donald Trump, is trying to corral him. Now, I made a prediction earlier that John Kelly would not last, just as everybody in the mainstream media was gushing about how his chin was so square, his jaw so solid, hence all of this is going to work. Well, the news out now is actually mixed, that some of it did work. So credit where credit is due, I'll get to that, and he has done some great things. And at the same time, Trump is chafing. Because he's a child. These are my favorite stories. So without further ado, let's go to Glenn Thrush and Maggie Haberman at the New York Times. President Trump was in an especially ordinary mood, that sounds like him, after staff members gently suggested he refrain from injecting politics into day-to-day issues of governing after last month's raucous rally in Arizona. And he responded by lashing out at the most senior aide in his presence. It happened to be his new chief of staff, John F. Kelly. Okay, little told you here, he's a man child. Okay, it's a general, he's really well respected, he's really orderly. That's not gonna stop the man child from getting upset and go, where's my milk and cookies? Why can't I talk about politics in the middle of a tragedy? So, Mr. Kelly, the former Marine general, brought in 5 weeks ago as a successor to Reince Priebus, reacted calmly. But he later told other White House staff members that he had never been spoken to like that during 35 years of serving his country. In the future, he said he would not abide such treatment, according to three people familiar with the exchange. Well, okay, my prediction is he will abide it, because people like power too much. On the other hand, Trump will not abide it. We asked you this poll question in an earlier segment that we did about John Kelly a couple weeks ago. And you guys also thought the same thing, that there was about a, according to you guys, about a 90% chance that at some point Trump will fire Kelly. But we'll see how that goes. So far, so good. And I'm not sure I want him to be fired. In fact, that's a poll question I'm going to ask you later. They explain, while Mr. Kelly has quickly brought some order to a disorganized and demoralized staff, he is fully aware of the president's volcanic resentment about being managed, according to a dozen people close to Mr. Trump, and has treated gingerly through the minefield of Mr. Trump's psyche. Indeed, the minefield of Mr. Trump's psyche. Look, they're not just talking to one or two people here. They've talked to a dozen people inside the White House. And this is the same reaction we got when we had a whole different cast of characters in the White House. Everybody says the same thing, because it's true. Donald Trump has a very thin skin. He doesn't like to be told what to do. He has temper tantrums. Everything, look, I don't even want to, again, I feel like I'm belittling kids too much, but it's what a moody kid, let's just call it that way, does, right? So, yeah, you have to say it. Now, Mr. Trump, you're wonderful and great and gracious and wonderful. But can I just say, maybe in the middle of doing Hurricane Harvey empathizing, you shouldn't talk about your crowd size. How dare you? Where's my milk and cookies? This is the man child in charge of the country. God help us all. The president has still bridled at what he perceives as being told what to do. It's a very, very common theme. Look, guys, if people are trying to manipulate you, that's annoying. And there are instances when people play politics inside of a company and obviously inside the government. And you can sniff that out and put an end to it. That's perfectly fair and a good thing, a positive thing. But when someone earnestly tells you, hey, here's my honest advice about what I think you should do, that would be helpful to you, to our party, to our policy priorities, to the country, you can't go, hey, don't tell me what to do. Well, it depends, dude. Do they have your best interest in mind? Don't they? Do they have the country's best interest in mind? And don't they? Are they right or are they wrong? You can't just, every time somebody gives you advice, you can't flip out and go nuclear like an idiot. Well, that would require you not to be an idiot, and that's where we run into the problem. All right, so more on this front, and here comes the turn. Like every other new sheriff in town, Mr. Trump has hired to turn things around at the White House or in his presidential campaign. Mr. Kelly has gradually diminished in his appeal to his restless boss. So, and the reason it goes like this is that first he hires someone like Paul Manafort, who was his former campaign manager. And the guy looks slick and he's got a nice suit and he's been a lobbyist for a long time and he thinks, and he worked in a lot of presidential campaigns. He's like, okay, good, this is a successful person, I like this guy. And then Manafort says, hey, can you stop being such a schmuck? But of course, in very political terms, says to not offend him, Mr. Trump, so you are so brilliant, but could you please do this instead of that? And he's like, how dare you? And now in John Kelly's case, oh, general, oh, he looks up to the generals. That's why he's got Jim Mattis as defense secretary. He's got McMaster at National Security Council, and he's got Kelly as his chief of staff. Oh, general, successful, rich people, good, generals, good. Everyone else sucks. I don't want him in my government. But after a while, he realizes, oh, this is a person who's smart and trying to give me good advice. Therefore, I hate him. So more details. The question now is how long Mr. Kelly will stay, with estimates ranging from a month to a year at most. How many times can I say told you? All right, but it hasn't happened yet, so let's see how it goes. Mr. Trump, who has said that he has surrounded himself with former military men from, quote, central casting, respects Mr. Kelly, aide said. But again, just like I said, since he, and he says that, that's a quote from Trump. These generals look like they're from central casting. That would be great for a reality show, for actually running the country. I mean, we're lucky it looks like Kelly is actually organized, but central casting shouldn't have anything to do with it. How they look shouldn't have anything to do with it, but Trump has said this on dozens of occasions. He doesn't like people who don't look like they should have the role. Even though Mitt Romney had gone after him very aggressively during the campaign, he still considered him for Secretary of State, and it wasn't a fake consideration, according to inside sources, because they said Trump thought he looked like a Secretary of State. All right, anyway, so we got lucky that Kelly actually does fit the role that he was cast for. It appears, because you're going to see some good news in a second. Okay, the president, for his part, has marveled at the installation of management controls that would have been considered routine in any other White House. He says, quote, I now have time to think, a surprise Mr. Trump has told one of his senior aides repeatedly over the last few weeks. Yeah, if idiots like, and madmen like Steve Bannon and Omarosa, as you're going to see in a second, all these people don't just burst into your room and go, I got a great idea, let's hate these people, right? You might actually, and you do things in an orderly way, you might have time in your schedule to think. Now, once again, God help us on what he's thinking. I don't know that we want Trump thinking a lot. And that would be a fascinating problem. I'd love to sit in the room and see, oh. Yeah, anybody got pictures? Anybody want to turn on Fox? Right? But okay, good, good, order is good. Mr. Kelly cannot stop Mr. Trump from binge watching Fox News. Of course, from binge watching Fox News, which aides describe as the president's primary source of information gathering. For the third time, God help us all. Like, I mean, at a minimum, even if you're on that side, like, you've got to be cognizant that Fox News is doing perspective reporting. And again, I know he's not cognizant of this, and even if he was, he wouldn't care. Their so-called reporting is not even prospective reporting. We've reported 100 times about internal memos from Fox News where management tells the anchors what to say based on political grounds. Hey, pretend that Hamas is celebrating democratic victories. Pretend this is happening, pretend that is happening. But even if you get past that, he was looking at Fox and Friends and Hannity, these are all opinion shows. And he sees it and he's like, oh yeah, it was a fact. Steve Doocy said it, how could it be wrong? Oh, okay. So now, the really good news about John Kelly is that he has kept most of the crazies out. So let's give you details on that. Now, Mr. Kelly, this is still the New York Times. Now, Mr. Kelly has thinned out his package of printouts so much that Mr. Trump plaintively asked a friend recently where the Daily Caller and Breitbart were. Mr. Kelly has told his staff time and time again that his goal is to rationalize the chaos that has engulfed the management of the West Wing. Managing Mr. Trump is beyond his or anyone else's powers, he has said repeatedly. In other words, throwing his hand up going, I'm trying, brother. Okay, now if you don't know, the envelope he used to get, usually prepared by Steve Bannon acolytes, would be filled with right-wing propaganda from sites like Breitbart. Of course, that's the one that Steve Bannon used to run and now runs again. And so they'd put that in front of him like, oh my God, immigrants are dirty and terrible and you should ban them all. And he'd be like, I found a fact. It says here on Breitbart that immigrants are terrible, we should ban them, right? But think about what a child he is that he doesn't even know they were playing that game and that they were putting that folder in front of him. And now that somebody else is playing a different game and putting a folder that doesn't have those, he's genuinely asking like, hey, what happened to Breitbart and Daily Caller? Are they not in the news anymore? No, you schmuck. Ironically, what's happening is the thing that you're worried about, which is that they're playing you. They were playing you before to be crazy. Now Kelly's playing you to be sane, thank God for that. But either way, the fact that you can't see that is so sad. If I was the president and somebody keeps putting opinion pieces in front of me with a certain agenda, I'd be like, yeah, that's all good and fine. I get it, that's like your opinion, man. But what's the actual news of today? And of course, Trump is not savvy enough to understand any of that. Jesus, man, his IQ is, I don't know that it's made the double digits. This guy is really, really dumb. Okay, so now more good news. Okay, so you got some of the extreme right-wing propaganda off the president's desk, that's good. And then you got Omarosa Manigault. Believe it or not, she is in the White House. Yes, she's the reality show star. On the other hand, so is Trump. So the stories, this is now the Daily Beast. The stories Manigault would present to Trump, often on a phone or printed out, would often enrage the president and resulted in him spending at least the rest of the day fuming about it. For example, one White House source noted that Manigault was one of the people who would bring to President Trump's attention online articles concerning MSNBC hosts and former Trump pals Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, slagging him and his administration. So, and that's what caused Trump to go nuts and say that Mika was bleeding from the face, which got him into more trouble. Omarosa's whole point in the reality shows that she was in was to cause trouble and chaos. That's why she was an interesting character on TV. She would love to pit people against each other and create drama. If you're running a reality show, perfect. She's exactly the kind of character that you would cast. If you're running a White House and she's doing it to the president, that's a profoundly bad idea. And then he's so stupid he doesn't realize, and he's like, oh my God, is somebody saying something bad about me? Oh, Omarosa, thank you for creating this drama. So Kelly's like, no, you're gone. No, you're banned. You're not. If you're gonna go into the office, you have to ask my permission. And she's, oh my God, she's talking to a camera as we speak. You know, like the shots that they do in a room by herself. I can't believe General Kelly did this to me. He is so outrageous. Okay, now one more on Omarosa. Unnamed Trump administration source says, when General Kelly is talking about clamping down on access to the Oval, she's patient zero. So she's the one causing the most amount of problems. Again, given her track record on TV, that's not surprising. Now, another guy with a lot of problems is Sheriff Clark. He's the guy who recently quit in Milwaukee. And there I have great news on behalf of John Kelly. Sheriff David A. Clark just lost out on yet another Trump administration job, and he has the president's chief of staff to thank. We actually all have the president's chief of staff to thank on that. Sheriff Clark is a lunatic. Four sources working in and close to the Trump White House said his failure to land a gig in the West Wing or the Department of Homeland Security, where Clark unsuccessfully sought a job earlier this year, was in large part the result of opposition from White House chief of staff John Kelly. Kelly led the Department of Homeland Security until late July. At Department of Homeland Security, Kelly had personally shot down an idea supported by some officials in the Trump White House to have immigration ultra hardliner Kris Kobach as a Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security. So these are all really good news. Now look, one of the reasons that Kelly said no to Sheriff Clark was because a guy, several people have died in his prisons, including a guy who died of thirst, which is unbelievable in America, including a child who died during childbirth because they wouldn't bring any medical professionals to help the mother. I mean, really barbaric stuff. But to give you a sense of what a lunatic Sheriff Clark is, he believes that Black Lives Matter and ISIS are working together to bring down the country. Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. And Kelly's like, oh, that's good. Now, of course, Donald Trump Jr. loves him, takes pictures with him, puts it on Twitter. All these cast of characters around Trump are like, oh, Sheriff Clark. And Kelly's like, oh, yeah, yeah, look. And none of these guys are remotely liberal, okay? Including Kelly. Kelly's hard right wing guy. I mean, when he was in the Department of Homeland Security, he was all on board for the Muslim ban. He wanted to, you know, he's on board for building the wall. Don't get it mixed up, okay? This guy's no one's moderate. He's just not a lunatic. So when a guy walks in, he's like, I got a great idea. I want to work at the Department of Homeland Security. And he's like, okay, I'm all ears. What do you got? All right, what is it? I think ISIS and Black Lives Matter are working. Okay, good. Get the fuck out. Okay. Get. Hurry up. Getting out of here. And Kris Kobach, this guy's, you know, as hardliner as it comes. And I was wondering why he was not in government, because he sounds exactly like Trump kind of person. And it turns out Kelly had blocked it. So he just wants to be more reasonable in the right wing path that they are going and more sane. So it's going to get coming to our question in a second, but one last quote for you guys now, back to the New York Times. But one associate who spoke to Mr. Kelly last month said the former commander had remarked that his current assignment was by far the hardest job he had ever had. And that includes being a Marine grunt and everything else that he's done in his life. Of course, how do you control an uncontrollable man-child? So the question I pose to you guys is, should John Kelly resign in protest or stay and keep Trump in check? TYTnetwork.com/chief of staff. Now look, there's two reasons why you should say resign in protest. One is, well, he's brought some level of competence to the Trump White House, and we don't want them to get the Muslim ban passed or the wall built and or giant tax cuts for the rich. So maybe John Kelly's not such a great thing in terms of policy. The second reason is, well, look, anybody with a conscience should resign in protest from Trump administration, especially after what he did after Charlottesville. On the other hand, the man child could get angry and nuke North Korea or start a war that kills millions of people. Not an easy question. So TYTnetwork.com/chief of staff. Curious to hear what you think. He has kept more of the crazies out. He has brought order to the Trump White House for now. Likely it won't last because as Scaramucci, another guy that Kelly basically fired, famously said, the fish rots from the head down. And that fish is Donald Trump, and it smells. Okay, now speaking of smells, let's go to Rush Limbaugh. Okay. Rush Limbaugh has a theory on hurricanes. Apparently, they might not really exist. Now, of course, this is enormously dangerous because Hurricane Irma is barreling down the Caribbean right now and very likely to hit Puerto Rico and also likely to hit Florida. So people must take precautions. But he's not going to go in that direction. He's going to go in the direction of lunatic conspiracy theories and endanger people's lives. So it's both amusing because it is so insane, but at the same time, very dangerous. So let's listen in.
The reason that I am leery of forecasts this far out, folks, is because I see how the system works. Now, I don't mean this to be a personal attack on anybody, but the one thing that's undeniable throughout our culture is that everything has been politicized. And in that sense, much of our public information system, including from the government, from the drive-by media, has been corrupted. It has been corrupted by the individual biases and whatever present bigotry of the people who hold these positions. You can see it in the way the deep state deals with Trump. You can see it with the way the intelligence community and the Washington establishment deal with Trump. So in the case of a hurricane, what happens? Well, there are many levels here. When a hurricane pops up, and we can't forget Hurricane Harvey, because Hurricane Harvey and the TV pictures that accompanied that go a long way to helping further and create the panic. Now, in the official meteorological circles, you have an abundance of people who believe that man-made climate change is real. And they believe that Al Gore is correct when he has written, and he couldn't be more wrong, that climate change is creating more hurricanes and stronger hurricanes. And of course, when Harvey hit, it was the first hurricane that had hit in 12 years. There haven't been more hurricanes, and they're no more dangerous than any others in previous years. But doesn't matter, because the bias is built in. So there is a desire to advance this climate change agenda. And hurricanes are one of the fastest and best ways to do it. You can accomplish a lot just by creating fear and panic. You don't even need the hurricane to hit anywhere. All you need is to create the fear and panic accompanied by talk that climate change is causing hurricanes to become more frequent and bigger and more dangerous. And you create the panic, and it's mission accomplished, agenda advanced.
Now, there's more, and there's a lot to say here, but let's just note for the record that Hurricane Harvey did actually hit, and it was real, and over 60 people have died, tens of thousands have been displaced, billions of dollars have been lost. That's enormously real, and it was more severe, it did create more rain, it did create more floods, and the water around Houston has gone up a half a foot in the last couple of decades, just like the scientists predicted. Hurricane Harvey was a more severe storm, just like the scientists predicted. And this, so now let's go to the fact that everything he does is projection. He says, now I have to tell you that everything has been politicized. Yeah, by you. You've politicized everything, including hurricanes. You're doing it right now. And then he says, the media has been corrupted. Yeah, by you. So among his so-called advertisers are right-wing think tanks. Those are funded by both multinational corporations and right-wing billionaires. Now, they don't actually need the people who listen to Rush Limbaugh to do anything for a think tank that's already funded by the billionaires. So why do they spend millions of dollars on Rush Limbaugh? Because they're buying propaganda. They're not selling any goods. They're not even selling any of the crazy shakes that Pat Robertson or Alex Jones sells. No, they're just saying, okay, you, well, I want to corrupt you. Here's money. You say what I tell you to say. And Rush is like, great, I'd love to do that. And then he talks about how there's a need to create fear and panic. That is Republican 101. Oh my God, the immigrants are crossing the border. They're crossing. Oh, they have all the power. That guy who crossed the border with nothing at all, he has all the power. He's the problem. Oh, Sharia law is coming. Oh my God, Oklahoma is going to get taken over by Sharia law. Creating fear and panic. That's exactly what Rush Limbaugh does. So let's let him finish here as he talks about, as he said earlier, the biases. And why do you talk like that? You're such a weirdo. All right, here you go.
So what happens? Well, the TV stations begin reporting this and the panic begins to increase. And then people end up going to various stores to stock up on water and whatever they might need for home repairs and batteries and all this that they're advised to get. And a vicious circle is created. You have these various retail outlets who spend a lot of advertising dollars with the local media. The local media, in turn, reports in such a way as to create the panic way far out, which sends people into these stores to fill up with water and to fill up with batteries, and it becomes a never-ending repeated cycle. And the two coexist. Both the media benefits with the panic with increased eyeballs, and the retailers benefit from the panic with increased sales, and the TV companies benefit because they're getting advertising dollars from the businesses that are seeing all this attention from customers.
So the retailers are working with the media companies. And by the way, look, if you say advertising affects what's happening on TV, I hear you. For example, political advertising affects it tremendously. So there's a rational argument to be made. But in this case, let's just follow his chain of thought here, logic, if you will. Okay, the retailers want to charge you more for water, for example, but except they don't. They freeze the prices, otherwise there's enormous blowback. But okay, whatever, they want to charge more according to Rush, and they want everybody to grab the food, and that's true, the shelves are empty. So what they tell MSNBC and Fox News and CNN, pretend there's a hurricane. CNN then goes to all the meteorologists and says, okay guys, you need to make up a hurricane that isn't actually coming, because this is part of what he mentioned earlier, a deep state plot against Trump. Except for the fact that a hurricane is coming. It's a category 5. Irma is the biggest hurricane ever recorded in history in the Atlantic Basin. So let's go to an actual meteorologist, Al Roker. He says, do not listen to Rush Limbaugh when he says Irma is not a dangerous storm and is hype. He is putting people's lives at risk. He says, to have Rush Limbaugh suggest the warnings about Irma are fake about profit, and to ignore them borders on criminal. Hashtag shame on Rush. If you don't get out of the way of a category 5, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. You and your family's lives could be at risk. This buffoon, this conspiracy theorist, this guy who's paid to do propaganda is telling you, don't believe your eyes, don't believe any of the scientists. Just sit there in the eye of the storm and wait for it to hit you, because it's all hype. Don't, whatever you do, if you live in Florida, certainly Puerto Rico, it might, your life might literally depend on you not listening to Rush Limbaugh. So there's a time for politics, and there's a time for science and reality. And science and reality are about to hit us pretty hard again. Look, there's a good way to show this, by the way, too. There is an ending to this movie. We'll know what happens when it actually comes. And if it hits Cuba and Haiti and Puerto Rico, but by the time it gets to Florida, it slows down a little bit, I know what Rush will say. He'll say, ha, you see that? It wasn't that bad. As if Puerto Rico and Cuba and Haiti don't exist, right? But they do in fact exist, and they are real, and so is the hurricane. And God help them all. I hope that it somehow slows down and miraculously does not hit any of that land. But that is not likely. What is far more likely is that the reality of climate change is hitting us, and it's hitting us hard, and it's hitting us right now. Okay, all right, so that's Rush. Now let me go to another lunatic who's even crazier. Really? Yeah, well, wait till you see. Ralph Peters is a so-called security analyst for Fox News. And he also writes for the New York Post, because Rupert Murdoch is a warmonger and will put any lunatic on air and will print any article as long as it leads you to more war. Rupert Murdoch owns both the New York Post and Fox News. Now, Ralph Peters belongs in an insane asylum, but as long as he creates more war, Murdoch will take him out of that asylum and make him a respected analyst and pay him a lot of money to do this warmongering. So in case you think I'm exaggerating, well, I'll give you the exact article that Peters wrote, and you can make your own decision. First of all, the headline in the New York Post for this article is, the moral answer to North Korea threats, take them out. Okay, usual black and white idiocy of the right wing. You either destroy them all or they destroy us all. There is no middle ground, there is no diplomacy, there is no nuance. Why don't they just write the headline, we're stupid? Okay, but anyway, so this is the beginning of his brilliant piece. Listen to this, quote, better a million dead North Koreans than 1,000 dead Americans. Now, first of all, that's a false paradigm. There's no scenario or hypothetical where, okay, either we're gonna lose 1,000 Americans or a million North Koreans, we gotta make up our mind. In reality, if we start a war, we are likely to lose a million North Koreans and a million South Koreans and a lot of Japanese. Those are supposed to be our allies. He never mentions them. He never mentions that all those South Koreans and Japanese people are very likely to die with just conventional weapons, let alone atomic weapons, if we start a war with North Korea, because who cares? What are they, human? They're not Americans. I don't care about them. Well, you're gonna hear for yourself in exact quotes from him. But here, He's saying in a hypothetical, and by the way, thousands of Americans could also die. What if Kim Jong-un is not bluffing and they actually could reach Seattle, let alone Hawaii or Alaska or Guam or anywhere else, let alone South Korea, which we're supposed to care about. That's our allies there. Well, we had to start the war. There's nothing we could do. Now, you're saying so far, he's saying, well, Cheng, did he say we're going to start the war? Great, hold on. The fundamental reason our government, this is a quote, the fundamental reason our government exists is to protect our people and our territory. Everything else is a grace note. Look at this monster. He just talked about killing 1 million North Koreans who are basically living in a police state right now. A lot of them are in concentration camps. They didn't ask for it. It's their dictator that's keeping them down. And he's like, well, you know, 1 million dead Koreans. It's a grace note. They're unreal, man. He said, we should do something. This is again direct quotes. We should do something. Pyongyang's Sunday test of a hydrogen bomb of devastating power begs for decisive action. Must we wait until Americans die? This is the usual, we don't want the evidence to be in the form of a mushroom cloud. It's what Condoleezza Rice said before we attacked Iraq. How did that turn out for us? Oh, right, with thousands of dead Americans in a war we started and didn't need to start, let alone hundreds of thousands of dead Iraqi civilians. But are they really human? Do they really count? But the warmongers always say, don't wait, you gotta act first. Here's more quotes to make it perfectly clear. Quote, a preemptive strike against Kim Jong-un's nuclear and ballistic missile programs would be a terrible thing, demanding a vast military effort if done properly and leaving broad destruction in its wake. But that terrible option increasingly appears to be the least bad option. The question is whether we'll delay action until it's too late to save American lives. In other words, go right now. Don't wait for diplomacy or economic sanctions to work or have to do negotiate with the Chinese and the Russians to put pressure on the North Koreans. Bomb, 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 bomb. And it's the usual thing of like, oh God, it's such a shame we'll have to nuke them. I wish we didn't have to and kill millions of innocent people, but I guess it's the least bad option. It's the last. No, it's not the least bad option. I could name you 1,000 least bad options than using nuclear weapons on innocent civilians. And he's like Stalin, thinking 1 million people sounds like a statistic. It doesn't sound like real people. Understand, when we drop a nuclear bomb, babies get incinerated. Grandmothers get burned alive. You know, when ISIS chops off heads or burns people alive, we are rightfully outraged. We would burn 1 million innocent civilians alive with this plan. And that's just, he's not saying that's even a bad case scenario. He's like, oh yeah, that's 1 million North Koreans, who cares? I am theoretically saving American lives with a war I'm starting, which will in reality cost American lives. He says, we do not want war. That much could not be more obvious. No, the whole point of this article is to say, let's go to war. It's obvious in the opposite direction. It's this typical, I don't want to name his name, but hey, I don't want to do this, but oh, they made me do it. The North Koreans are so bad that I had to. Well, what could we do? Golly gee, we had to nuke them. Did I say nuke them? I said war was a bad option. He said, but we cannot sacrifice American lives to shield the consciences of intellectual elites who from protected positions of immense privilege insist that all human life is precious, not just our quote, deplorable American lives. Break that down. First of all, who the hell said American lives are deplorable? Hey, idiot, I don't know if you know this, we all live here. Our families are here. Nobody thinks our lives are deplorable. Do you think we think our children's lives are deplorable? No, we would do almost anything to protect our kids' lives, our families' lives. Nobody said Americans were deplorable and that it's okay for them to die. You made that up because you're a lying, I could keep going on and on with adjectives, but a warmonger who wants the war no matter what and is willing to nuke people, kill 1 million innocent civilians without thinking twice about it. And then when he talks about like, oh, these intellectuals who think all human life is precious. Okay, well, at least the lines are clear. Yes, I do believe all human lives are precious. If you don't, that's fine. I think you are an absolute monster. You should have no power in this country at all. Now, if we need to go to war, This country has gone to war many, many times. There is an appropriate time for war, such as World War II. By the way, when we were actually attacked, and we did not go into World War II until we were attacked. But for these guys, no, can't wait for an attack. Just in case, let's kill a million innocent civilians, because these intellectuals think that life is precious. Those North Koreans, are they really humans? South Koreans, our allies that we lied to, said we'd protect them. Who cares? They're Koreans, they're not even Americans. The Japanese, who cares? Who cares? It's not me. If it's not me, they don't count. He says, warfare has been humanity's ultimate means of resolving intractable issues since the first cave dwellers went at the gang from the cave down yonder with rocks. Wait, I thought you said you didn't want to go to war. Now you conclude by saying it is the ultimate means of resolving intractable issues. Why don't you just at least be honest about it? You want the war, you're looking forward to the war, and you've done everything to admit that you don't care about anybody else's life, and you think that that makes you somehow moral, that you're willing to murder babies and children and moms and dads and grandmothers and grandfathers, just burn them alive. Imagine 180 families being burned alive. Oh my God, that sounds so horrible, right? A million people, I got news for you, is a lot more than 180. It is family after family after family burned alive, incinerated. And Ralph Peters says, who cares? A million dead North Koreans. Who cares? The intellectuals will tell you that their lives matter. You're goddamn right we will. And we will try to protect all lives. And yes, of course, American lives, because we're Americans. We don't want to be endangered. It is your policies that endanger us. And as long as we can prevent it, we are going to try to prevent this totally unnecessarily brutal genocidal war that you and your warmonger friends want to start, including your financier, Rupert Murdoch, who is just as much of a monster as you, maybe worse, because he hires monsters like you to say other people's lives don't matter. Let's just murder them preemptively. That's who you are. I'm not done yet. Now we go to our mainstream media. We're going to turn to politics, local politics. I don't know who I'm more mad at. Yeah, I'm more mad at Ralph Peters. Okay, but these guys piss me off too. Okay, last story here. So yesterday we did a story on Verit, that is a new site started by Hillary Clinton acolytes. Peter Dow has started it. And first thing he did was cry about how the media is not on Hillary's side. On which planet? Anyway, we're going to prove that where they lie in a second. But I want to show you the tweet that he put out there. And Hillary Clinton endorses Verit site. And he said, Lila Dow and I founded Verit because Hillary Clinton voters and inspiringly diverse coalition are unrepresented in the media. Hillary people are unrepresented in the media. So I give you Exhibit A, a panel yesterday on CNN to talk about Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders' primary. Now, one way to go about this conversation is to say, well, in a democratic process, of course you have a primary to determine who should be your nominee. And it's not incumbent upon anyone in a primary to withdraw. Under that logic, shouldn't they have all withdrawn so that Martin O'Malley could win? What a bizarre thing to claim, right? You will notice that every single panelist on CNN believes that Bernie Sanders was wrong to have ever challenged Hillary Clinton, who of course should have been anointed. Anyway, you can watch for yourself here. First guy up is David Swerdlick. He's an assistant editor for Washington Post, the same Washington Post that wrote 16 negative articles about Bernie Sanders within 24 hours. Gee, I wonder if they're biased. Let's find out.
You know, it may not be a popular thing to say, but I think she's right that he was one of a number of reasons why she lost. There were a lot of, sort of self-inflicted reasons. But one of the things that Sanders did in that campaign, for better or worse, was convince some Democrats that whatever had happened during the Obama years, a 38% drop in unemployment, getting rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Obamacare, etc., wasn't good enough, that they weren't getting anything out of their party, and that they should go a different way.
Couldn't you use that logic in every single primary that has ever been? If these guys hadn't challenged Mitt Romney, he would have beat Obama, but they did so much damage to Mitt Romney. If Bill Bradley hadn't challenged Al Gore, he would have beat George Bush. I mean, he lost Florida by this much. Actually, he didn't lose Florida. Okay, so, oh my God, let's just end democracy. Because we in the media anointed Hillary Clinton. How dare Bernie Sanders challenge her? Hey, why don't I flip your logic on its head? Bernie Sanders, in not some polls, in every single poll, and if you're a so-called journalist at the Washington Post or CNN, I defy you to find one poll 6 months out, go back as far as you can almost. Well, I think it's probably all the way out to a year out, where Bernie Sanders didn't do better than Hillary Clinton in a general election matchup against any of the Republicans. All of the polls said Bernie Sanders did better. So why don't you flip the logic and say, why didn't Hillary Clinton get out? She cost the Democrats by staying in, Bernie. We don't know, no one knows for a fact that Bernie would have won, but we do know for a fact that every single poll indicated he would have done better. We do know on the day of the election, she lost to a guy with a 37% approval rating, which was previously unimaginable. We do know that on that same day, Bernie Sanders had a 12-point lead against him. These knuckleheads think they're so sophisticated. Did you know that they would have run a campaign against Bernie Sanders? Yeah, of course we know that. So maybe the 12-point lead would have gone down to 8 points or 4 points. But it's a much bigger cushion than Hillary had, which is what we were pointing out based on science. So why didn't Hillary Clinton leave the race? No. Hillary, well, of course she was going to be the candidate. We all love her on TV. Oh, you left that part out. You left a part out where the Washington Post attacked Bernie Sanders mercilessly, day in, day out during the primaries. Well, if you had done likewise to Hillary, maybe Bernie would have won the primaries. But no, it had to be Hillary, your beloved Hillary. You think he's the only one? No way. Here comes Jeffrey Toobin and Gloria Borger to do even worse.
If Bernie Sanders set up the crooked Hillary image, you know, through talking about the speeches to Goldman Sachs, right, talking about how she was in the pocket of Wall Street, that I think was used to devastating effect.
Let's just play this out. If she had hit back at him on all of this stuff, Bernie Sanders did not raise her emails. Remember, he was sick of her damn emails, right? So he didn't raise her emails, and he would have if she had hit him back, if she had hit him harder. If she had started hitting back at him, they would have just handed the Republicans more fodder.
You agree?
Absolutely, absolutely. And especially about the idea of personal corruption, the idea that there was something about her that was untrustworthy, which was something that Bernie Sanders made very clear.
Okay, wow, look at that. 3 for 3. Every single one of them had Hillary's boots for lunch. Bootlickers to the last one of them. Do you agree? Of course, Hillary. It would have made, if Hillary had hit him, then we know that Bernie would have hit her. In other words, Bernie never hit her. He had the bankruptcy bill. He had 1,000 examples. I had him on the show and I asked him. He's like, I know the examples. I don't want to run that kind of negative campaign. He should have hit her. He should have hit her 1,000 times harder, so we wouldn't have lost to Trump. We could have had a real candidate who could win, who was a populist, who people actually cared about, instead of your goddamn elites on CNN and Washington Post and your beloved Hillary. So get this. She didn't hit Bernie. Oh my God, poor Hillary. How about when they called every Bernie supporter racist? How about when they implied that all of them were sexist? How about when they stuck the Bernie Bros thing on him, a piece of propaganda that is Republican 101, and every one of you on CNN and Washington Post went along with it. How about all of that? Oh, no. That Bernie, he was so mean to her. We had already crowned her queen. And then this guy came up and just ran a completely positive campaign saying, but maybe we shouldn't take billions of dollars in donations. And yes, the Clintons took $3 billion overall in campaign donations to the foundation and personal money they put in their pocket. And to say that maybe if you get $3 billion that some people might want something in return. Don't say that. Then you're talking about corruption. And on TV we don't talk about corruption because it's our boat. We don't want to rock it. Where do you think all the TV, where all the political money goes to? It goes into Jeffrey Toobin's pocket. And if you told him that, he'd go, oh, conspiracy theorists crazy. No, no, no. The ads go on TV. What's on TV? CNN is on TV. Does CNN make tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars from the campaign? Of course they did. Well, who signs your paychecks, Jeffrey Toobin? CNN does. But what? Well, they didn't tell me what to do. Of course, you schmuck. They didn't have to tell you what to do. They hired you because they already knew you were a bootlicker for the establishment. Yeah, how many Bernie Sanders supporters are on that panel? Zero. How come they never made it on? What a coincidence. It's not a coincidence. They hired all of you guys because you love the status quo. You are the establishment. So you would go on there with your legitimate opinions about how awesome the establishment is and how Hillary Clinton should have been our queen. And that pesky Bernie Sanders, if it wasn't for you rascally kids, we could have gotten away with it. Well, you're not going to get away with it. Next time, I guarantee you, fire and ice. I guarantee you, we're not going to have kids' gloves anymore. And if it's Bernie or anyone else and they want to run a soft campaign like he did against Hillary Clinton, we're not going to have it. We are going to tell the American people the reality. The establishment is deeply corrupt, including Jeffrey Toobin, including Wolf Blitzer and Gloria Borger and the Washington Post. All of you, you all take the money and you all do exactly what the donors tell you to do, and the money gets funneled around and around Washington. Yes, you are the elite. Yes, America does not like you. Sad day for you, but get the fuck out of the way, because we're not going to lose to Donald Trump. We're not going to lose to Republicans again. So if anyone should have left the race, I know it is an unimaginable thought to you. No, it must be our queen. It must be the queen of corruption. If anyone is going to leave the race, it's going to be the establishment. And it's not going to be progressives this time. It's not going to be a populist agenda. We're going to win with a populist agenda. And if you don't like it, go ahead, try to stop us. I wish you a lot of luck. You're going to need it, and it's not going to work. We're going to run over you, Young Turks. All right, back on Young Turks, John is here. We got to go, so I'm going to read some quick, excellent tweets for you guys.
Sentences don't follow each other. Well.
The forgotten arm says, would General Kelly follow Tyrion's example and slap the fake tan off of Trump someday? Who would believe that if that tidbit leaked?
That'd be awesome.
Yes. Michael Ritchie says, Omarosa didn't even win The Apprentice. I like reality TV stars that aren't losers. That's really funny. And Margo says, maybe Trump will listen to Rush and spend the weekend at Mar-a-Lago. One could only hope. Those are both excellent ideas. So Michael and
he'll be fine. He floats.
Michael and Margo, you both get t-shirts. Shoptyt.com. Oh, by the way, you will not be getting hats because the TYT hats have sold out. We are reordering them, maybe. We'll get them in a couple of weeks. But things do sell out of the store, so that's reality. That's not a conspiracy theory. ShopTYT.com, go check that stuff out. And Michael and Margo, you guys get any shirt you want there. All right, go ahead, John.
First of all, I want to say that I'm very disappointed that we're probably not going to do the third story, because it's awesome.
I hear you.
Unfortunately, we won't. Okay, Republicans are back to once again occasionally holding town hall meetings, but don't get too excited about it. It's not like democracy or anything, because it... Pat Toomey's recent PBS aired town hall, a man was actually arrested for asking a question that they deemed disruptive. Let's watch.
Our next question comes from Simon from Northampton.
Hello, Senator. Thank you, Simon, for coming to answer our questions tonight. I know we've been here for a while. You probably haven't seen the news. Can you confirm whether or not your daughter, Bridget, has been kidnapped? The reason I ask is because that's the reality of families that suffer deportation.
That's a ridiculous question.
We're going to move on immediately to our next question now.
We're going to move on immediately to our next question. Look, I actually think, so the way that he framed it is unsettling. Okay, it definitely is.
But it's intended to be.
I know it's intended to be, and we're going to explain that.
We're going to read the whole question soon.
But. Yeah. He says, we've been here for a while. You probably haven't heard the news. There's no way you're not unsettled by that. So I get that you're going to be pissed about it. But let the guy finish, because he was trying to make a really interesting point,
yeah,
which really goes to the core of why people hate politicians.
Yeah, and the problem really is that they sort of cut him off too early. Like, all the creepiness is already passed at that point, and you could have gotten into the actual question. Like, look, I've had experiences of doing live shows and people cutting in for a bunch of BS or whatever, and even in that case, where they weren't trying to make a serious point and have a dialogue, we still heard them out and responded. They should have done that. It's PBS, they're gonna be a little bit scared, of course. And in fact, Tim Fallon, the CEO of PBS 39, said that it was one of the scariest things I have ever been part of.
Oh, Jesus, okay.
Well, some of us lead blessed lives.
But
a spokesman for Toomey said that asking questions that are based upon kidnapping a child is not only reprehensible, but it is inherently threatening. Inherently threatening?
Now look, it's a dangerous road to go down, so I'm not 100% with him. But for God's sake, let's read you the rest of what he intended to ask, so you guys have context.
So we didn't actually see it there, they cut him off. So let's bring up his Facebook post that the gentleman posted later on. And the important part is when you get to, do you know whether your daughter Bridget has been abducted? Using the name makes it a little bit creepier, let's keep it real. Whatever you're feeling right now, that's what it feels like to have a daughter deported. Thousands of fathers here in the valley that live with that fear every day. Their daughters have names too. So here's my question. Do you unequivocally denounce any attempt by the administration to reverse DACA, which would hang the threat of deportation over hundreds of thousands of children the same age as Bridget? And so the thing is this is the way that it works. He's the politician, the distinguished gentleman, as you always point out. So if you talk about him potentially losing access to his child, this is inherently threatening. Get it, this is ridiculous. Cut his mic, arrest him, take him to jail. No charges were filed, but he did actually get arrested. But if you and hundreds of thousands of other families might have your children snatched away while you're at work or while you're commuting or something like that, oh, come on, we're not even gonna talk about that. That's a waste of our time to even discuss.
Look,
that's how the power imbalance works in this country.
I think talking about people's kids is way out of bounds. I think going to
his kid could be deported.
Hold on. And I think that going to people's homes are out of bounds. I know some left-wing guys did that to Bill O'Reilly. I don't like that. I know that he threatens to come to people's house. He sends people to people's house. But I don't like it on either side. And I think it's too personal, it's too hard. On the other hand, well, this guy is clearly making, he didn't actually go to Toomey's house. He doesn't actually have Bridget. Okay.
Yeah.
He was making a rhetorical point. And he was saying, for a brief moment, I wanted him to feel, just for the smallest moment, for to feel what it might feel like if your kids were taken from you and taken away. And so the point that he's making is an intellectual one. So if you let him finish, it would have been an interesting question. And if you actually bother to answer. Now, wait a minute though. I know you're part of the elite and it is unconscionable for you, but shouldn't it also be unconscionable for the everyday American, for people who live in this country?
Yeah.
And so, if it's such a horrific thought to you that I am banned immediately and arrested,
is threatening. The actual reality for millions of Americans is not nearly as important to him as a pure hypothetical that he had to think about for 2.5 seconds.
And right now, the right wing might argue, well, Trump deporting 800,000 people, including their kids, and in the case of Dreamers, they were all kids when they were brought in. They're not all necessarily kids now. Well, you could say that's a hypothetical. Well, the guy just got arrested for a hypothetical. The initial charges were disorderly conduct and disrupting a public meeting.
I think he's good now.
Now he's good now, but that was the original charges.
Yeah.
So, well, then shouldn't we arrest Trump? I mean,
hypothetical it is, it's a lot less hypothetical than it was last week.
And
in 6 months, it might be a lot less hypothetical.
But you know that dude asking the question in the middle of a town hall can't actually set laws, right? But Trump and Toomey and the others can set laws, and by getting rid of an executive order, has actually taken action, real action. So we're not saying threaten the establishment and their kids, or it's a, of course not. That is reprehensible.
Leave Bridget alone.
But what we're asking you to do is to treat the rest of us also as human beings.
Yes.
And that when our kids are endangered, allow us to also feel threatened and to worry about our kids. And please take that seriously, because that is an actual threat, real threat that could happen, now is likely to happen.
Yeah.
So the disparity in how we're treated is what is unbearable to the rest of Americans. But the folks on TV and the senators, they're blinded to it. They literally, I don't think Toomey has even considered that idea.
And look, he's a Republican politician. We know that most Republican politicians seem to have been born without whatever genes it is that causes empathy. But like, you have to try and fight to make him realize for just a second that for these people whose lives you don't know about or care about or experience, Pat Toomey, they love their kids at least as much as you love your child. They're not just hashtag Democrat larva or whatever conservatives want to call them. They care about them just as much, and they care about their future, and they're scared of them being ripped away from them in the same way that you would be for Bridget. That is what Pat Toomey forcibly rejected having to think about and actually experience even for a second.
Yeah, and in the post game, I'm going to give you guys an example of a question just like that, very similar to that, not just like it, a little less harsh, but one that gave a hypothetical that I asked a law professor when I was a conservative, and the reaction she had, and it's amazing. You know, it is true that people want to shut down speech that they are uncomfortable with, no matter which direction it comes from. But the common theme is the same rules do not apply to us.
Yeah.
The elite and the establishment are untouchable, and your kids are optional. And if you feel, you know, that we might rip them away from you, whatever, that's not our problem, that's your problem. And that is what's driving Americans crazy about the establishment.
Yeah, my last point is I look forward to the videos from Tommy Lahren and Tucker Carlson about this guy's free speech rights.
Right.
Being violated.
Yeah.
They're going to go wild tonight about it.
Yeah. Look, I'm sure every right winger and Shapiro and all those guys,
they're so angry right now.
Right. They're protesting in Pennsylvania as we speak. Anyway, find out my story from when I was a conservative. TYTnetwork.com/join. If you become a member, you support the show and you get the post games where we give you more personal stories as well. All right. We got to take a quick break here. When we come back, we do have a couple of stories for you. All right, back on TYT, Cenk and John. The liberal mom writes in, Pat Toomey is my senator. He's as useless as a filament for a tube TV. That is a curious analogy. All right.
I see. If you just asked me, do tube TVs need filaments? I'd be like, yes. Yeah, they need like 5 filaments.
Yeah, I got a filament the other day on my tooth. All right, let's keep going.
Okay. As Hurricane Irma continues its path towards Florida, along the way, by the way, devastating multiple islands. We've been seeing news throughout the day about that. Many along the way are evacuating. Some are getting away if they can. Obviously, in the islands, it's difficult. Some fleeing to different sorts of shelters. But there are certain areas where if you do intend to go to a shelter, you better bring your paperwork, because the Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd is going to be screening everyone that tries to get into one of these shelters in his county to make sure that you've never broken any laws. He tweeted this, if you go to a shelter for hashtag Irma and you have a warrant, we'll gladly escort you to the safe and secure shelter called the Polk County Jail. This is a man with his priorities in order. He says, if you have a warrant, turn yourself into the jail. It's a secure shelter. I guess that's trying to save himself the paperwork, I suppose. And we're gonna go to some other quotes of this guy, because he's kind of an a-hole historically. But look at that. I mean, some people are going to look at that and think, oh, well, yeah, I mean, you don't want people who are breaking the law in a shelter. But what you probably also don't want is most of the police that are supposed to be helping people instead spending all their time going back through the personal histories of everyone who tries to get a blanket and a roof over their head.
Sounds like a big government bureaucracy to me. So there's a couple of issues here. One is, I don't want, just like John said, forget the paperwork. I don't want the cops driving back and forth between the jail. Let's go. There's a hurricane category 5 coming.
They probably can't do that anyway once the hurricane hits.
Yeah. There's a category 5 coming. It's the biggest hurricane that has ever been recorded in the Atlantic Basin. Let's prioritize here, okay? Yeah. Now, look, I know one of the things he said later is that we don't want innocent children in a shelter with sex offenders. So, okay, that's fair, and nobody wants that. But
Remember how broad our sex offender laws are in the US. Like, if you're an 18-year-old that streaks like a football field or something like that, you're a pedophile for the rest of your life.
No, I know. But I don't want to get into distinctions of child sex offenders. It's not the time, okay? Yeah. Because if you start talking about that, on the other hand, people have minor traffic violations. They couldn't pay it, and then now there's a warrant for them, or they didn't have insurance when they were driving. Look, you can do pray to the horribles on both ends. This is not the time. Get people into shelters, because while you're doing paperwork outside and discouraging people from coming to shelters just in case they had a traffic ticket or a fine or whatever it was, people are going to die. So let's rescue everybody first, and then if you're the sheriff, isn't it your job to, in normal times, to go serve those warrants?
You'd think.
Like, isn't, like, so what are you trying to shirk your duty here? Like, oh man, it's such a pain in the ass to go try to find those people. Yeah. And really, if there's a sexual offender out in the loose so that has attacked children and you haven't caught him, well, go catch him before the hurricane. Yeah. Catch him the other 364 days.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, there's the people who did something, like, I don't know, God knows what you could have a warrant out for that isn't as bad as he's making it sound, who theoretically won't go to a shelter and might now die in the hurricane. But then there's also the chilling effect of that they're purposefully, like they do in elections, when they say all of your paperwork is going to be checked and they're going to go back over your history. It's a lot of people are now going to be scared that some out of control police are going to be rooting around in their personal history, intimidating people and all of that stuff. And they won't necessarily feel safe going to the shelter now. Even if they don't have a warrant out on them, some people are going to be scared away from this and they're going to be outside when the hurricane hits and lives will be lost. I don't even think that's a side effect of what he's doing. I think that's the goal of what he's doing. He's not trying to catch a couple of people with warrants. He's trying to keep the shelters stocked with just the sort of people that he's comfortable with.
Well, part two, this is a good illustration of how a lot of politicians, not a politician, but he's trying to look a certain way, like a politician would. He wants to look like a tough guy. Bottom line, he has no, maybe he doesn't. I'm speculating completely here. What's the level of plan that he has to check every person that comes in? He wants to put out an APB and say, hey, everybody, I'm the tough guy, and whoever wants to come in here and deal with this tough guy is gonna deal with this tough guy, because I'm a tough guy. Hey, aren't I a good sheriff? It's all self-promotion. Yeah. So whatever it is once you wanna make yourself look a certain way so that you don't have to actually do any other work, I'm getting everybody that comes in here. Go ahead, be a tough guy.
Yeah, well, look, my take on it was slightly different than you guys, because it was going to be the one time the police got good press for helping people, and he's like, I got a great plan to ruin it.
Hold my beer.
Yeah.
I can take care of this. Yeah, so we don't have time to go back through all of his quotes, but this guy is insane. He's regularly encouraging the people in his district to go out and murder people.
All right.
Anyway.
Last story.
Okay. Back in May, Donald Trump had a very high profile trip to Saudi Arabia. You might remember it. It led to a couple of odd moments, like if we could bring up this picture, you might remember the orb incident. I don't know what that was about. Nobody gets that to this day.
To this day, I don't understand.
And nobody understands why they're all looking in different directions or what it is that Trump's looking at or why his face is contorted in that particular froggy way that it is. But look, he had that meeting and there was a
did the Saudi prince or whatever he is, did he see a ghost? Did he see a jinn? Whoa, like he seemed freaked out. And Trump looked like he was like the main villain in some sort of B movie.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, like it's like he sees Sauron's eye and he's kind of happy about it.
Right, whereas at least the Saudi dude has like the decency to be freaked out by Sauron's eye.
And Melania's like, good, one ball I don't have to touch. Anyway, so that wasn't all that went on in that trip. Actually, it turns out that the Saudi government showered Donald Trump and his family with over 80 gifts. Gifts that are weirdly luxurious, even by Donald Trump standards. And so we want to go back through a few of these and then get into why there's potentially some legal troubles with this. But first of all, these are just weirdly specific. An orange and gold wool robe lined with cheetah fur, a blue and silver wool robe lined with white tiger fur, and just in case you don't like that, but you still want to wear tiger, you get the purple tiger fur one too. So three tiger and cheetah fur robes. There are like dozens of robes in this, by the way. We're not going to list them all. Then it gets sort of weirdly martial. There's a dagger made of pure silver with mother of pearl sheath and various designs. One large sword, a dagger, a leather ammo holder and holster, and then just in case, backup daggers and swords and holsters. The hammer of Thor, an Iron Man Mark II suit. No, I'm kidding, those weren't there. But lots of weapons, multiple daggers, which they messed up. Okay, if you want to win over Donald Trump, you give him a opulent tiger fur robe. if you've got daggers and swords, that's how you win over me. Because I want those. That sounds awesome.
There's literally one on your shirt.
Oh my God. We've got more, but what's your initial impression?
Well, I actually think they do have Trump figured out. Once you tell them my favorite part in a second,
okay.
It's a perfect combination of things that would appeal to Trump. But I want you guys to understand the context. Normally, the US president, his first foreign visit will be to either Canada or Mexico or our, you know, the UK, which we always say we have a special relationship with. Now, I understand why Trump is not going to go to Mexico first. That might not be the first great trip for him. But he ignored all this. Yeah, United Kingdom, Canada, who cares, right? And he went straight to Saudi Arabia, which we always thought was slightly weird. And so now that we know that he's been showered with gifts and
clothes,
he was trying to have business dealings with them as well. And so you begin to understand the context of why on God's green earth he went to Saudi Arabia first. And of course, in return for all this, they got $110 billion weapons deal.
Yeah.
And so
that was the return gift, it turns out. If someone gives you shirts and scarves, you give them $500 million of precision guided munitions.
Yeah, by the way, we're like, oh, the Saudis gave him daggers and swords. Remember, the Saudis actually do live by Sharia law, the one that Republicans like Trump claim to be freaked out by. And so there's some benign parts of Sharia law as to like how you get divorced. I don't agree with any of that either, but at least nobody's getting killed. And then there are bad parts of Sharia law, especially how the Saudis interpret it, not how everybody interprets it. But they have this same interpretation that ISIS does. That is why they also chop off people's hands and their heads.
Yeah.
And they do it with swords like the one they gave Trump. I mean, could you imagine if Trump went and got an honorary sword from ISIS? But these guys have the same religious ideology, but it's not just an ideology. It's a fundamentalist interpretation of Islam that they act out, that they execute people with, chop their heads off with. And everybody's like, oh, bravo, a sword and a dagger from the Saudis. Okay, now finally the best
part. Scary. Oh, we're getting it. First of all, let's jump through these next two. It's four traditional shirts in black, orange, and green with floral embroidery.
Jesus.
Oh, Trump is going to be such a fancy lad in his floral embroidery. Anyway, I'm just joking. More leather ammo holders and holsters. How many holsters does one man need?
Jesus.
By the way, I don't think he could properly fill out one holster, if you know what I mean. Okay, next, four boxes of gold-plated coin from Bank of Kuwait. Did they literally just give him a bunch of gold? Are you allowed to do that?
That's just giving him money.
That's coins. That's literally a bank gave him coins.
That's call a bribe.
Yes. My favorite might be three painted boxes filled with various small trinkets and children's books, which Trump was reported as squealing with delight and then saying, oh, Barron will like these. By the way, the books were above his reading level, so they messed up again. I was surprised to see a bronze dugong model, which if you're not sure what that is, this is a dugong. Although for Trump, it'll probably look more like this. It's a marine mammal related to a manatee.
Which of course is found in the Saudi desert. What?
I don't know, but he's got it. Let's run through a few others. Another sword, a copy of the Kuwaiti Constitution. That seems weird. A sleeveless white silk cotton garment, which as soon as she saw it, Melania said, please never ever wear that. A portrait of himself and three chiffon dresses. I think those are separate. I don't think he's in the chiffon dresses in the portrait. But you've got multiple colors there. And so what was your favorite, not any of these?
No. My favorite was the giant portraits of Donald Trump that they gave him. And not only they put artwork featuring the picture of the president all over the buildings when he came in.
Yep.
So now break it down. They think, okay, we got to appeal to Trump so he'll give us whatever we want. What does Trump like? He's obsessed with himself. He has an ego. Put Trump pictures everywhere. And then literally hand him pictures of himself. If I went to a country and they're like, congratulations, here's a picture of you, I'd be like, what? Right? But Trump is like, yes. Remember when he misused his own charity funds to buy pictures of himself.
And dugong models, yeah.
Yes.
That's what he bought.
And belligerence, that is the swords and the daggers. He likes belligerence. tacky. Oh,
he loves tacky.
The pale chiffon dresses and the
Wool purple tiger rugs.
The tiger robes. Oh my God. They're probably like, who the hell would wear this? Yeah. Oh, perfect. Trump's coming to town. Yeah. Right?
So look, it's obviously really funny, but there is a more serious angle. It's really fast. Legally, American officials may keep gifts from foreign officials that are valued at less than $390, which doesn't buy you a lot of tiger fur last time I checked. So did they donate them? Did they give them away? Well, the White House didn't respond to an email seeking comment from the New York Times. So there is every reason to believe that they broke the law and kept thousands, hundreds of thousands, or millions of dollars of gifts from the Saudi government. That they are even right now in violation of the law and refuse to provide any evidence that they're in accordance with the law.
To be fair, they can keep the tiger robes. But they better turn in the Kuwaiti gold.
That is
ridiculous. This is a ceremonial present we call dollars. Here you go.
Many dollars. And by the way, if you wonder, well, is this just a Trump thing? No. The Saudis do give gifts to other presidents. Back in 2015, State Department records show that they gave almost two dozen gifts to officials, including Barack Obama and Michelle. So they got less than two dozen, which is far less than the 80 that Trump himself got. One was lavish. It was a sculpture of two horses covered in diamonds, savorites, I'm not even familiar with that, yellow sapphires, rubies, and obsidian, worth $500,000, but we know that because that's what it was appraised at when the Obamas gave it away to the National Archives, as they're supposed to, in keeping with the law.
Okay, I can't wait to
see. But the parties are all the same.
I can't wait to see the tiger robes in the National Archives. All right, we got to go. Amazing stories.
You're going to see him lounging on a bed in a tiger robe is what you're going to see.
Amazing stories in the second hour, including the arrest of an NFL player, which is shocking. And unfortunately, it happens far too often. We'll give you the context, and I'm pretty worked up about that on a day where I'm pretty worked up. Come right back.